We'll get to choice, destiny, and sacrifice well in turn. But if I had one word that I wanted to sum up this movie with, it wouldn't be either of those three, although they're pretty good. But just looking at several of the main characters, I think something that seems more prevalent to me is obsession. I really think that that's a primary component of this film and what it's portraying. I'll just start with Otto because he's kind of the obvious. He's the antagonist. As with many a great story, even in great literature, from Frankenstein to the apings of that we've seen, he has an idea. He wants to create something. He's going to create fusion that's going to benefit all of mankind. He's going to create something wonderful. He's going to champion all of our ills and solve all of our problems. We really see sort of the classic story, which we come back to, which is sort of the failure of human reason and invention, that he has this goal in mind, and it failed. He has fantastic arms, there's fantastic technology, he has this great idea in mind, and yet he can't achieve it. I never really get into why he fails, what components may be missing, but man's devices are insufficient to cure our ills, and that's sort of one common theme you see in a lot of stories, even Jekyll and Hyde, which also brings to mind some of these things. Although somewhat externalized through the AI arms, we see the sort of wrestling with morality that he goes through. He's failed kind of in both ends of his creation. The chip's gone. He's being manipulated. There's that externalization of the arms, almost like a serpent in a garden. So using his own reason against him, oh, it would be a crime not to finish it. Of course. And really using reason. There's no malevolence here. He's created artificial intelligence. He's talking about committing suicide. Their survival kicks in. They're really just sort of an extension of his sort of selfish attitudes and self-serving. Fusion experiment winds up destroying. He intends it for good, but yet it goes awry. His intelligent arms corrupt him and cause untold damage on other people, particularly that great scene in the hospital, which for those of you who know Sam Raimi's past, recognized a lot of tips of the hat to some of his former horror movies. But we have this internal and external morality play sort of going on with Dr. Octopus, or Doc Ock. Reason and rationalization enable his morality. We see that with the arms, he keeps justifying, it'll work, it was working, something must have gone wrong that had nothing to do with me, I just need to make it bigger, I need to make it better. My thinking was flawless. Tempted and corrupted by his own devices. And then, of course, we have the character everybody loves. According to some critics, the weak link in the acting chain. But no matter what you think of James Franco, Harry Osborn is a classic case of obsession and, of course, carrying with it the weight of the last film. And then his father seemed to be obsessed, corrupted by money. In the first film, his father was motivated for a desire to prove his own worth, his own inventions, to leave a legacy. And of course, money being a key part of that. Alcohol, all the old standbys. He's kind of just the average guy. Power, ignorance. He's upset with Peter. He doesn't understand the situation going on. There is some truth that hasn't been told between them. So it's partially ignorance, but it's also distrust and hate. He hates Spider-Man. He doesn't understand why Spider-Man was somehow related to the death of his father. And he finds that out at the end dramatically as he sort of inherits his father's legacy. And for those who know the comic books, I won't spoil, but you can all chuckle with me as you know what could possibly be coming next. As he literally, the sins of the father may be visited on the son. But I want to get to Peter. I think that's the focus of this. We all want to talk about Spider-Man. So we come back to what we saw at the beginning, the sort of the woes of a superhero. He's keeping secrets, and that just destroys all his relationships. Trouble with women, with his job, paying the bills, fitting in. But I think there's a little bit more going on here than just that. I think we resonate with that. I think that it's very much like many of us experience in our lives or feel like. And we usually justify it, right? Everything's going, all of these other things are in dysfunction because I've made some decisions and I'm trying to do good. I have good intentions with my life. He says at the very beginning of the film, I made a choice once to live a life of responsibility. Really? Let's take a look at his life of responsibility. How about his employer? You know, you contract to get a job. He's supposed to be working for his employer, his landlord, his aunt, his best friend, Mary Jane, who he sort of has that like, no, go away, no, come here, kind of go away. And I can't blame her for being a little a little weirded out. His best friend, Harry, I mean, does he even try to address that? Does he try to come up with any reason? Does he try to mend that relationship? Even his arguments are pretty weak. Why? Because he's too obsessed with being Spider-Man. That responsibility has supplanted all other responsibilities. That's not responsibility, that's obsession. Responsibility is when you're managing all the affairs of your life, not so singularly focused on one that it's destroying all the others. That's not responsibility at all. This is what we got here. With great power comes great guilt. That's Spider-Man, ladies and gentlemen. Not responsibility. With great power comes great guilt. That's his motivation. What's he guilty about? Even the Spider-Man editor, the current editor at Marvel Comics, Axel Alonso, is quoted as saying that Spider-Man is the perfect lapsed Catholic. He's committed a sin for which he can never atone. Death of Uncle Ben. Even says to Mary Jane in this movie, he said, if you got hurt, when he's talking into the phone that's not really connected, if you got hurt, I could never forgive myself. That's a problem there. We'll get to that. But the real issue is he can't forgive himself for Uncle Ben's death. So he goes out and he beats up the criminals again and again and again. See, he's going to make amends for what he did. Because Uncle Ben, as he says, he's the only one that night who was willing to do the right thing. So now he's going to do the right thing again and again until he feels better for Uncle Ben. But he doesn't feel any better. So come to all these issues of choices. He's choosing to be so singularly focused on what he has made his singular responsibility that he's wrecking life. He doesn't even notice until it's being foreclosed upon that his aunt's in such financial trouble. Maybe she was hiding it from him. She has some ego to deal with herself, not laying all the blame at Pete, at his feet. But his choice to neglect parts of his life and obsess on Spider-Man, do they satisfy? No. He's wholly unsatisfied. So then he decides to quit. And that solves all the problems, right? Raindrops keep falling on his head. Everything's rosy. That was probably my favorite part in the movie. It was just that still frame. That was the most inspired part. Forget the action scenes. So no matter what choice he makes, he's making all of these choices with life. They don't satisfy. Nothing satisfies. I think that's telling. He has this conversation with Otto Octavius before he becomes the Octopus. And Otto says something to him about intelligence, but of course any conversation you have with Peter Parker is about him being Spider-Man, whether the person talking to him knows it or not. So Peter's thinking. Let's put on Peter's mind for a minute. Intelligence is not a privilege, it's a gift. Maybe that doesn't mean a whole lot. Maybe that just sounds pithy to some of you. But privilege is just, if you're born into privilege, he didn't work really hard to get those spider powers. He worked really hard to get that venom through his veins all night. He didn't do anything. He just got it, right? Just like you're born into money. Well, it doesn't imply that you need to do anything. It doesn't imply anything. If you're just privileged, if I have thousands of dollars, if we as a country are so rich, why are we giving money presently to other countries, particularly for this Asian crisis, people in need, South Africa, the AIDS crisis? Why are we giving money? We're privileged. Because we can? Because it makes us feel good? Because it's the right thing to do? Well, why is it the right thing to do? We're privileged. He's got powers. If it's a gift, and that's what Uncle Ben says in the car. He says, you've been given a gift. Add those two together. Otto doesn't talk about the gift being given. That's kind of a no-brainer. Gifts are given. That means there was a giver. And you pair that back with the tagline from the first movie, the thing that this all keeps coming back to together again and again, is with great power comes great responsibility. With great privilege, with the gift that he has been given, which implies a giver, it means it has intention, that it has purpose. Right there, the crux of the film, no matter how much Sam Raimi's zeroing in, or even how much Stan Lee thought this through when he put it together, the reason with great power comes great responsibility is because it has purpose, because it was given with purpose. There's where responsibility comes from. His power has a purpose. This is where destiny comes in, destination. That Peter is being called to do something. That it was no mistake, that it was no accident. That this is design, that he has a purpose, that he has a job description that he should be fulfilling. And when he's been doing it in the last movie, it's been all out of guilt, right? It's the best intentions, and maybe even it's the right direction, but it's for the wrong reason. It doesn't satisfy, so he's failing. Ultimately, he's stumbling and failing. He wants to quit. And his quitting isn't even any better. Not only does his quitting not satisfy, but his reasons are wrong. He sees the guy getting beat up. He knows he should act. He knows that he has purpose. We all know we have purpose. That's where conscience comes from. The question is, where does it come from? That's the big debate when you leave this building and you walk around the city. Who gave us this conscience? It was given. So we get to Aunt May's happy, warm apple pie speech. A little too happy for me, a little too overly optimistic. I'm not ready to say there was a hero in Hitler. So maybe, I don't know if there's a hero in all of us. It's very comforting. But she talks about the need for the hero, that little boy needs a hero. He knows, he needs to know that there is someone looking out for him who will save him, who will set an example for him. And she says to Peter, which is probably the most profound thing she says, sometimes we have to be steady. And we have to give up the things we want the most, even our dreams. And that's tough. That's tough to swallow. Peter even passes that on. That's how he wins over Octavius. He agrees at least with that part. I'd agree with that part. That's what one author calls a long obedience in the same direction. You have to be steady. You have to maintain your course. You have to give up the things you want the most. And we see Peter, he takes this from his aunt, and it becomes something he lives by, and he ends up proselytizing Dr. Octopus and at least having him turn around and save the day. He transmits that message. But he goes to his aunt because he's been trying to reconcile this death of his Uncle Ben, and just every time he goes to the graveside, it's just like guilt, guilt, guilt. Finally, it's overwhelming to the point where his aunt says, it's my fault. And that just breaks him. It's too much. So he confesses his sin. He confesses to his aunt. He can't confess to Uncle Ben. Uncle Ben's gone. I don't know if he can make true amends for this. I don't know if he can get the forgiveness that he really needs. But in lieu of anything else, he confesses it to the person he sees as his mother. The person he's closest to. He confesses his sin. And on the heels of that, before he even talks to his aunt again, he becomes a hero again, right? He runs into the burning building. Even without his powers. He cannot stand idly by. He has a purpose. He needs to fulfill it. And he just sacrifices in that way. He even asks the question, am I not supposed to have what I want? And he seems to basically conclude, yes. He seems willing to give that up. This is what a lot of us ask. And ultimately, it's kind of the wrong question. You're right. It's life is not about what we want. It's not supposed to be about what we want. I like that. Then he goes back and he talks to his aunt, and his aunt gives him the forgiveness that he can't give himself. Guys, we can't forgive ourselves. We want and need to know that we're forgiven. Yeah, I feel really bad, but yeah, I'm going to forgive myself. No, it doesn't happen. No matter how much we do to fill that gap, to fill that void, we can't forgive ourselves. In the context of this film, I don't know if this is, I don't really believe that true forgiveness just comes through another person either. But for the sake of this narrative, Aunt May gives him the forgiveness. She hugs. She still loves him, despite his admission. And he gets the forgiveness that he can't give himself. And of course, as happy endings will have it, because he's willing to give up absolutely everything he wants, and he accepts his destiny, and moves on, what happens, of course? Who comes running to him in white at the end? Through nothing, he ends up saving her life. Inadvertently, she finds out his identity just through circumstance. Perhaps providentially. I think the real sacrifice is Mary Jane. And I can't speculate on a third film, although I think it's already in pre-production. But she looks just a little bit sad at the end. Anybody else catch that? maybe just a little bit nervous. Some people say it's just because she's not a good actress, but I am. I'm not anti-Kirsten Dunst. But she looks a little worried at the end, because I think the biggest sacrifice in the movie is her. Aunt May had to offer Peter grace in light of a horrible admission. If she just said she would never forgive, she would, you know, what she would do if the person who was responsible for Uncle Ben's death, you know, he comes and he tells her. She forgives him. She still loves him. That's an amazing sacrifice to me. Peter makes sacrifices in the film. I think the women in the film make the most sacrifices. See, he's worse than a firefighter. Worse than a military guy. And things aren't going to change. She just knows why he had such a hard time juggling his responsibility, right? Now she knows why. That doesn't mean he's going to be any more accessible. There's no promise. I think the biggest sacrifice is Mary Jane. Hopefully she can handle it. And so I think Peter Parker does. I think he fulfills in a lot of ways, both in the old comics and I think in the context of these films. I think he does. I think he fulfills sort of this idea of the woes of the everyman, all the ways that we hurt. I just think that those are just scratching the surface. I think this movie very nicely states that a lot of us, in fact, at some point, all of us, we act out of guilt. We have a lot of good intentions. A lot of the good things that we do, the things that we strive for, they're trying to sort of placate guilt of wrongs we've done in the past to make up for those, or wrongs just of humanity itself. We act a whole lot. Many of the things we do out of our lives, all the things we claim are altruist, we're acting out of guilt for our own sins. We have the best intentions, but ultimately, just like Peter, if those are the reasons, just nothing satisfies. So he's the hard luck kid. He's been the hard luck kid for 40 years in the comics. Time and time again, they keep inventing ways to show that where he doesn't feel like he fits. Not just in with his social crowd, but in his own skin. It's not comfortable. Spider-Man suit, human suit, nothing feels right. The primary thing there that I said we'd come back to is that we can't forgive ourselves. We need to know that we're forgiven. And I think a measure of that comes through in the movie in its own way, in its own form. And we need a purpose that comes from a relationship. I think he does. I think at the end of the film, he's not acting out of guilt anymore. I think he has been able to reconcile some of that, but he's accepted his destiny. It's not even really much of a choice. He just has that moment of clarity where he says, am I not supposed to have what I want? And suddenly, a girl brings him chocolate cake. And just kind of sits there, and he just kind of swallows it. He has all these choices he can make, but ultimately, he has to come to terms with the fact that he has a destiny. I think we do resonate with that as well, even if some of us don't want to think that we have one. And then it has to come from people, right? It has to come from his aunt. Forgiveness has to come from people in this movie. It has to come from, hopefully now, a wife. Maybe they'll have a big marriage in the next movie. She's already got the dress. But he needs relationship. He needs community to feel whole. And that purpose comes out of a response to that community. He has the community, and now he can respond. Now he can go out. Now he can swing and actually scream Yahoo and fly around with helicopters. Trying not to get caught in the rotors. But these three concepts, our choices, we obsess so much about our choices, and they do matter. They have consequence. We see that in the film. But it doesn't change the fact that I think that we do have a destiny, and we know that. I think that tension, that wrestling, and having to sacrifice in light of that, I think that's why Spider-Man has endured 40-some years and who knows how many more. Hopefully he'll endure a few more movies than some of the other superhero movies. So let's go ahead and say a word of prayer and officially close. Father God, I just want to thank you for the grace that you have given. Just thank you for the grace you've given me personally, God, letting me go through some of these self-same hardships, not with spider powers and evil villains, but the rigors of life and the confusion and wrestling with guilt, wrestling with what my motivation is, what my purpose is, what my direction is. Lord, I think we've all been there. Some of us still there. Some of us inevitably will be there again. And God, I thank you that we do not all have to drift in this sea of confusion and question, that we don't have to be permanently swept up in this ongoing serial like the character we watched tonight. We pray like this movie that in a real way, in an effective way, in a way that matters, that we can feel forgiven, that we can be, not just feel, but be forgiven of the trespasses, of the mistakes we've made, of the things we have rationalized and reasoned and justified, how ingenious we are, how self-sacrificing we are. Pray that we would break that pride, that we would not see ourselves as hero, that we would also, like at the end of the film, know that we need someone to save us as well, just as much. And we need a hero. We need someone above us, someone that sets that example, and someone that can change us, someone that can make us whole. God, I thank you that we can just enjoy something that's fun, something that makes us laugh. I just pray that we'll always engage it with our minds, that we'll always be bringing it back, and not just bringing it back to how it applies to us, and how it resonates with our life, but also what that means to relationship with the one who has given us so much, who has given us all the gifts, talents, and time and treasures that we have. And we would know those have purpose, that they have direction. And for anyone here who doesn't know, I would ask that you would give them the hunger to seek that out.